welcome to another edition of To Homer and Back, the official podcast of Streaking the Lawn. My name is Pierce. I've got two of my fellow Streaking the Lawn buddies here with me this evening. First off, I've got Eric. Say hello, Eric.
Hello. How's everyone doing tonight?
I'm doing great. And I've also got with us Caroline this evening. Say hello, Caroline.
Hey.
I'm glad you guys could join me this evening to talk about the opening of football season, which seems to me to have come out of nowhere. I cannot believe it's September. I'm a little upset about it because I love summer, but I'm happy about it because it's football season. And even though that's maybe not our most energizing sport in the world to follow, I'm still excited for it. I'm always amped. I'm always the optimistic off-season fan that most of us are. So I'm excited to see the Hoos take on the UCLA Bruins this weekend. They're playing out in LA. Hopefully, you know, the last time the team went out to LA and played USC, we showed up on national television. We played well. We didn't come away with a W, but I know we outperformed the expectations. So at the very least, let's hope for that this week. We'll get to predictions later on, but certainly UCLA is a fantastic team that's going to return a lot of talent this year. I'd say the biggest storylines for them are going to be the fact that they've got a suspended star player, their cornerback. Let's see, Ishmael Adams, who was their starting corner, who returned a touchdown against us last year off an interception.
Who didn't?
Yeah, well, true.
Sorry.
We've got Uber recruit Josh Rosen, who's going to be starting the game at quarterback for them, a true freshman. So that's some interesting storylines for them. But I'd like to hear the thoughts you guys might have about UCLA as an opponent. Caroline, if you want to go ahead and start us off, what do you see when you look at the Bruins starting the schedule for the Hoos this year?
Well, it's interesting for sure because, like we said, it's a big road trip. You know, top 15 ranked team. Correct me if I'm wrong, but preseason I think the top 15. Just to go out there, huge road trip to open the season. A team that we, for a lot of the game, outplayed in Charlottesville last year, minus a few bad plays on those defensive turnovers in the second quarter. Yet we're still in it, lost 28-20. Which I'm sure, I mean, it's a heartbreaker. Like, that was a crazy game. And the fact that UVA was even able to come in it behind a little Matty Johns football there.
Matty Ice, Matty Fresh.
Matty Fresh.
So many nicknames.
Papa Johns, the whole thing. But and having him start now, I'm interested to see what that's going to look like. They've got a great defense. Obviously, Ishmael Adams is out, so that changes things a little bit. But one of the big things that UCLA has going for them this year is depth. So will not having him starting at cornerback really affect that much? Probably not, but it is kind of nice to see what Matt Johns and his go-to trusty guy, Kane Severin, can come up with. Then the flip side of the ball, starting a freshman quarterback, someone tell him whatever side Quinn Blanding is on is the weak side. Sounds good to me. But it could be interesting to see some of our senior backfield guy, you know, guys out there, Quinn Blanding and Nicholson, have a little time to maybe he'll float a couple up there and we can return the favor that they did to us with some of the defensive touchdowns last year.
That would be nice. What do you guys think of the idea that the Pac-12 is the best conference in football this year? Can you get behind that? Are you still sticking with the SEC or some lesser conference?
I'll probably go with the SEC. I don't know, Eric. What about you?
I mean, I've got to agree with that. It's hard for me to see any team being better than the SEC, but the Pac-12's got good teams. UCLA, Southern Cal, Oregon. There's probably a couple others that I'm forgetting. So, I mean, the Pac-12 is going to give the SEC a run for its money, but, I mean, I do think whoever comes out of the SEC is probably going to win the national championship.
Yeah, one of the guys we haven't talked about for them is their two-way player, Miles Jack. I know he's moved to inside linebacker this year. I don't know if we're going to expect to see a lot of him on offense. I know they've got a big-time rusher in Paul Perkins, who I think he led the conference for them last year with over 1,500 yards rushing. So certainly the Hoos have their work cut out for them, even with a quarterback starting for the Bruins, but starting that or stopping that rushing game, you're looking at replacing a lot of talent on the D line for Virginia. Eli Harold's gone. We've got the defensive tackles there. I'm actually, pretty confident in with Wilkins and hopefully Andrew Brown comes along and obviously David Dean. Do you guys see that as being, one of the bigger keys to the game, the D line? And I know it's probably one of the biggest question marks for the Wahoos in general starting this season.
About the defensive line?
Yeah.
The front seven or the pieces from UVA's front seven last year, their big pieces went to the NFL. So you hope that coach Tenuta and just the rest of the defensive coaches could have had a really productive spring and summer. But they have some really really big shoes to fill.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was funny. I know Mike Mora, coach for UCLA, said something today. I saw on Twitter that he was saying, Jim Mora, sorry. All the Moras. They get confusing when they're all coaching like that.
Mike Mora is on our team.
Yeah. He comes out and says, whatever happens, I know Tenuta's going to come up with something that I'm going to have to, balance out and counteract, mm-hmm. which is true. I mean, I think we could all agree that defensively, I think Coach Tenuta has done a pretty fantastic job the last couple of seasons. I know last year that defense was – I enjoyed the team when the defense was on the field more sometimes. But and they were fun to watch. They play well and they play smart. But definitely what Eric said, it's going to be tough to see. It would be interesting to see what they come up with to combat losing some of those front seven guys. But I think, as you mentioned, all the stuff I've heard about Andrew Brown at this point has been that he's ready to step up to that five-star billing mm-hmm. he got out of high school. And unfortunately, with that injury last season, we didn't get to see a lot of that. So I'm interested to see how he does up there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think people want to see him match, maybe not match Quinn Blanding in terms of star power, but at least, live up to the hype in some sort of sense. Not that I'm disappointed in him. I think it's, you don't get freshmen like Quinn Blanding that come in and immediately take ownership over a team very often. So I don't think it's fair to say Andrew Brown had to come in and do the same.
Right.
But certainly there's got to be a step up, a big step up for the mm-hmm. talent that he possesses. And I think it's nothing but good news we're hearing out of camp from the media reports and such. But, it's still a bit of a I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing, too.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely a tough task. Yeah, every time I'm with you when you said in the intro about oh, my God, how is football season already here? I was joking, months ago when they start sending out those only this many Sundays till football, it sounded like a threat at first. But now I'm in super excited fan mode every video you see coming out of camp is some ridiculous play that's amazing, and you're like, we're gonna win the whole thing, we're going undefeated. So I'm in that pre first game lull happiness section there where I'm like, this is it, we're gonna do it, we're gonna take everybody down.
Our dreams haven't been crushed yet, we're optimistic. Yeah. I like it. It's funny, after last year's game, I certainly had that mix of fandom that was optimistic but some rational pessimism going in, knowing that UCLA was such a good team. And then to immediately have it go so wrong, with those interceptions, and go, okay, well, we're going to lose. I guess I'll go out and enjoy my Labor Day weekend. And of course I didn't. I went and grabbed a beverage and sat back down and watched more. And then we came back and I'm like, look, hey, we're actually pretty good. I think we're going to come back when Matt Johns comes in and really, really, start. He threw a couple of touchdowns, especially one really nice one. I believe it was to Kanan.
Yeah.
And then they lose and you're just like, okay, I'm just right back where I started. I don't know how to feel with the rest of the season in front of me. And certainly that's not an uncommon thing for us to think. I'm interested to hear what you guys have to think about Matt Johns, coming in as a starter, the unquestioned starter, something that we really haven't had potentially since maybe you could argue Mike Rocco, but then Phil Sims comes in and transfers, and that sort of threw the question up in the air. So even before then, Eric, what are you looking to see from Matt Johns as in terms of growth or as in terms of any increased play or really just in leadership of the team?
I mean, honestly, I'm looking for all three of those, because if you think about it, that long touchdown he had against UCLA last year had some people thinking that he might have ended up winning the starting job from Grayson Lambert, and as it would turn out, he wasn't able to. And he did look confident against Virginia Tech, so I was very happy to hear that he did end up as QB1 coming out of spring camp. And one of the other storylines I'm looking for, and this might not be much of one because he is the entrenched starter, but I'm wondering how long of a leash is Mike London and Steve Fairchild going to give him?
That's a good question. I mean, you got to think it's longer than we've seen recently,
You
but
would
there's no
hope, right?
guarantee. Yeah, you would hope. That would be my optimal sense of it, but that's a great question. Honestly, I can't begin to think I know what they're going to think or do in terms of their decisions with the quarterback carousel, but hopefully it's a longer one because I think Matt's got a little bit of that gunslinger vibe to him where he might make a few decisions that
Yeah,
are
definitely.
questionable. Hopefully we don't see the Kevin McCabe, you made two poor decisions, you're done. We're going to the freshman now or something like that. Do you have any thoughts on Matt Johns, Caroline?
I really like watching this kid play. I think one of the things that stood out to me last year, I know people say, Grayson Lambert has had a great arm, probably a little bit better arm than Johns. But I really liked his connections with the receivers. All of the routes just seemed crisper, and you have the actual option with Johns of if the play falls apart, he could get some yards after that, whether it's
Sure.
just, finding somebody on a short pass or taking himself and getting, he also had I think over 100 rushing yards last year, and considering the small amount of time that he played, that's not bad. I'll take that any day of the week. So I like that aspect of his play. He kind of everyone looked more comfortable with him on the field, and that's not at all meant to be a knock on Lambert. I wish him the best of luck. I think he's a great kid. I think we would have, I like him. That's not, but I just liked the way that they ran the routes. Kind of speaks to what Kanan Severin has been saying in the offseason and in the preseason about that kind of connection that he has specifically with Johns and how those guys kind of. Yeah, it just looks like he is in more in tune with his receivers and more. He didn't get too flustered. And yeah, he's made mistakes. Like, and I'm talking about it like he's about to win the Heisman. But like, I
Hey,
just
you never
liked.
know.
You never know. Crazier things
It's
have
still
happened.
the preseason.
Yeah, but I just think it'll be interesting to see because we do have so many options now, which is so weird to say. But at wide receiver and at receivers, even with T.J. Thorpe going out to that unfortunate clavicle injury. But we do have some options out there with Lavroni, who made that ridiculous touchdown grab in the UCLA game last year.
Though not as nice as his Miami touchdown grab, but both were good.
Well,
He
Severin,
has a whole highlight reel.
yeah,
Oh, that was Severin.
yeah. So I mean, we do, but that's the thing is we can now confuse some good highlight grabs. Like, so, there we go.
If there are highlights to confuse, I'll definitely do it. But you do mention Thorpe, who, as we've seen this summer, is unfortunately out with injury for at least the first half of this season. But it brings up, I think, another talking point. This being our first podcast really dedicated to the football team, let's talk a little bit about one of the bigger storylines from the summer, which is bringing in these graduate transfers. I know that's happened every once in a while with our football team on either side leaving or coming in, but we've got three pretty solid big name transfers coming in at important positions on the offense with Reed, Hopkins, and Thorpe. Caroline, what does this say to you in terms of is this filling needs, and looking elsewhere for them? Does that affect what we think of how we've recruited or how there's been roster mismanagement or anything like that? Or is it just the fact of that some guys want to go somewhere else and we had the open door for them?
I would say the latter. I think of it as a positive thing. Like, I mean, you get two guys in T.J. Thorpe and Albert Reed who are from within the ACC footprint. I'll say, I won't say ACC anymore. With Thorpe coming from UNC and Reed coming to his senses and coming down from College Park at Maryland. But it's something that, like, you can't deny the fact that UVA offers a great opportunity for grad school. And as much
True.
as people have said stuff about London and his coaching on the field, I think all the information is there to show that he works well with these kids off the field, and that he brings in these good. I mean, Charlie Hopkins has come in from Stanford, so no slouch to academics there. And we do have the need, and I think it's just kind of a. the match worked, you know, like it just kind of something came together. And in all of those guys that we've talked about, when Thorpe gets better, it actually could make for a really nice homecoming, not homecoming, like homecomings, but for him to go back down to Chapel Hill to play his former team could be a nice little reunion show. But then also, like I mentioned, Charlie Hopkins bringing him in as a big, big tight end target is great. That's going to be huge for someone, you know, for Johns to have that kind of target across the middle. I think, you know, everyone likes to think back to the Heath Miller days. And then, you know, we've heard great things about Smoke at running back. And having Albert Reed there as a big power runner, I think is really great. So I'm all for it. And obviously we've lost Grayson Lambert to Georgia, but he's just been named their starter as a graduate transfer. So that's great for him. You know, like, I mean, he got his degree from UVA. Like it's awesome. Like, like I said before, I wish the kid the best. So I think it's a pretty good system that, you know, coaches can take advantage of in case of transfers or injury or someone doesn't pan out like they thought they would over their, you know, time at school. So I think it's great. I think all three of those guys will be helpful at some point this season.
It is pretty interesting to see Grayson decide to transfer and go to Georgia, which was a, you know, normal choice for him. I mean, home school. I mean, top tier program. To take him in, and now all of a sudden he's been named the starter this spring. He was named today, for a top 10 program, which is you know, I don't know really what I think. You can obviously be cynical about that, whether it be our coaches reading it, but I don't see anything in his performance that separates him last year from Matt Johns. I was certainly torn between the two, and it's not, I'm not trying to knock on Grayson, but I'm saying he didn't look like someone who could immediately jump in and win the starting job at a top 10 team. So I'm not ready to be like, well, it wasn't Fairchild using him correctly, or you know, some things that I've seen on message boards or Twitter about that. But it's certainly interesting. Do you have any thoughts on that, Caroline?
Yeah, well, I mean, the biggest thing to me is that when it came out of the spring game last year, Coach London was like, oh, it's not even close, it's Matt Johns. Like, I think that was the biggest surprise to people. We're like, oh, so either Matt Johns is about to, like, go off on people, like, and he's this force to be reckoned with that we never saw coming, or, you know, it's interesting to me. I just don't know how to read that whole situation. But, you know, for UVA to finally have, like you said, the one guy, I hope they do give him a long leash, because I think no one, you know, when you look back at the last time we beat Tech, and we won't say what year that game was ridiculous. Like, fake field goals and, right, you know, airing out passes, and it was great. And that's the kind of football where I think Coach London might be ready to play this year, because it's kind of whatever. Like, people have talked about the hot seat, people have all that stuff. So there's really time to best and play conservative, because you're going against a ridiculous schedule. Like, obviously don't go crazy and, like, never punt it and only go for it on fourth down, but I think it gives them a little bit of leeway to kind of pull some of the trickeration in, you know, do something exciting, keep hands on their toes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you bring up at one point that maybe we don't need to go into for hours and hours, because we're going to do, you know, obviously some great podcasts week by week for the opponents. But it being week one, let's talk about the schedule. I mean, it's tough. You're looking at a pretty realistic chance of going 1-3 to start, all before conference play. Woof. And that just sets you up poorly. What do you guys think, Eric? What do you think about, you know, scheduling that? Obviously this happens years in advance. It's not like they threw this together in this off season, but do you appreciate the moxie of trying to play the best, or are you looking for a little more balance, or would you want to go the classic Virginia Tech route and just fill it up with cupcakes? I know they're playing Ohio State this past year, but you know what I mean?
Right. I mean, honestly, with the way the program is right now, I think back to the status that Duke had when Cutcliffe took over, and they start off playing these FCS and just really lower level teams, and before you knew it, they were playing for the ACC championship, and now they're starting to actually play better teams now that they have the capability and the program needed to, you know, actually win. So it makes me wonder. Okay, you know, okay, granted, some of these games were selected 3-4 years ago, but does the administration really, my question is, does the administration Craig Littlepage, John Oliver, do they really think that London and this staff and this team can get to 8 to 9 wins against UCLA and Boise State? And granted, we didn't really have too much of a choice over Notre Dame, but still.
Absolutely. I think, after that Peach Bowl year, certainly expectations went up, and you look to increase the schedule the following year, adding the Oregons, adding these Pac-12 games with UCLA included. But maybe it's a classic case of overconfidence with just a year of evidence that we were at a level of competing at an 8, 9, 10 win season. For a program that didn't have a lot of success in the previous years before that Peach Bowl year, which, let's face it, I mean, it was a great season. It was a fun season, winning down in Tallahassee, et cetera. But it wasn't like the end all be all. We didn't even win the Coastal that year. So it's not like you could look at it and go, this is a championship level team. Obviously, you look at it and go, we're going to take the next step. We're going to challenge for that Coastal here on out. But it seems to me like a classic case of maybe a little too much hubris in the scheduling, and it's coming back to bite us recently because we've had some down years and we've missed some bowl games. Last year missed it by just a game, where you take one of those tougher outer conference game and throw in a directional Michigan, and hopefully, yeah, I know we've lost to a directional Michigan before, but
yeah.
You know what I mean. And I think your point is spot on with Duke. However, I don't think we saw ourselves at the low level of what was not that recently Duke football, which was extremely uncompetitive. But again, you make a bowl game, you get that more that more time for the practices before the bowl game. It helps with recruiting, which brings in better talent. It's a circle for sure. Caroline, what do you think can be done? Nothing can be done with the schedule this year, but what are we going to do? If we go 5-7, that's almost the realistic best case scenario looking at the schedule right now. What are your thoughts on that?
It's really interesting because I see both sides. I mean, kids, as much as they also want to play in bowl games, but they want to play big games too, so you get kids that, I think we all agree that Coach London has been a phenomenal recruit, that you're still pulling in 4 or 5 stars after having some of the seasons that we've had. But if you look at last year, even with that crazy schedule, they were in every game but one. So, I mean, I know that also leads to discussions about other frustrations with too many men on the field and clock mismanagement, but they were in every game, and that was a tough schedule. Like, other than Georgia Tech, who's, that dang triple option, like, dang nabbit. But you got all the other games, UNC, and they're in the Duke game, then another shootout with Duke. I don't know how that keeps happening. So it's kind of, I don't know. That's a really good question, because you don't want to totally wuss out and just go with, the meager teams that are easy cupcake wins. You'd like to have one or two in there, but like Eric said, I think the Notre Dame falling in our lap was a huge, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to the game. It'll be exciting. That might be, and we can talk about this next week, but they've got an interesting schedule around us.
For sure.
So, I think playing Texas and then Georgia Tech after, so Texas before. I mean, that's kind of like, oh, hey, we'll just hide here in the middle and just kind of hang out. But it's with the non-conference, we have to start doing better in the ACC before I can really start saying, the reason is the non-conference, because if we can't win any games in conference, then it doesn't really matter, because
I think that's an awesome point.
Yeah. You can't go 4-0 in the non-con and then get swept in the ACC and then be like, our non-con's too hard, so it doesn't matter.
The one thing I would say in response is that, I mean, that non-conference still can be the key to making that bowl game.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, obviously that's still a line we're looking for, but you're right. In the end, the end of things, it really doesn't matter if you beat a bunch of cupcakes and do poorly in the conference, because you're not going to make it to the championship game. Mm-hmm. You might make it to some military level bowl game.
Hey, whoa, 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 easy champ.
What? Okay, isn't that the lowest ACC? is the lowest ACC bowl tie. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's certainly not a good one.
At least it sounds cooler than like Continental Tire Bowl or like some chip bowl or something, all right?
Why would you name the one bowl game UVA dominated the entire history of that bowl game as the worst? Oh, I hear you on some terrible bowl game names.
Is it the, like,
Micron PC, Gaylord Hotel Bowl?
Hey, we won that one.
Beefo Brady's? Whatever that one was.
Yeah, Beefo Brady's. That's my favorite one. That's my favorite one.
I believe we won the only Continental Tire Bowls that ever happened, because I believe there were only
I think that's right.
Okay, but you know what I mean. You gotta knock the military fears. Whatever.
Hey, well, come on. I support the troops. Don't worry. But just not their terrible bowl games. Okay, all right. I'd be so happy if we made that terrible bowl game.
I know, me too. I'd take the Beefo Brady's Bowl.
Well, hopefully we'll get to talk about our preview for one of those later on in the year. But I think the Notre Dame game, a lot of UVA fans' thoughts going into it are obviously going to depend on how we show up against this UCLA team Saturday. I think, you know, if we look good, even if we lose, people are going to be pretty optimistic with the home opener against Notre Dame, a team well known for choking. And as you say, a team bookended by very strong opponents around they're looking at UVA as a basement conference. Well, not exactly conference, but you know what I mean. So I think, yeah, it's got a trap game written into it, assuming we look like a decent football team this weekend, which is, I'm hopeful for. Why don't we go ahead and cut to the chase with some predictions for this weekend. I think what I want from you, I want your biggest question about the team or the matchup going into the game. I want the UVA player you're looking to make the game-changing play. So, like, best-case scenario, the game changes because of this one's player's spectacular play. And, of course, a final score prediction. So if you guys sound like those, I think those are good questions. Eric, what do you think? What's your biggest question going into this game, Eric?
Yeah, my biggest question is probably just the compete level and the amount of mistakes that are made, whether it be 12 men on the field or needless personal fouls or anything of that nature. And that's one of those things that I think it'll be a really good indicator of the kind of, for lack of a better word, control that London has over the team right now and how much faith the players have in him. As far as a game-changing player, I could see Blanding in the second half come up with a really big interception or two, maybe a pick six if we want to get crazy with our predictions there with that.
I like it. Be bold.
Maybe, but I think at the end of the day, this is, again, we talk about this, a good UCLA team, a really good defense, and I'm going to go 24-13 UCLA.
All right, yeah, all right. I like it. Well, I want us to win, but...
Right.
Good stuff there. Let's, Caroline, let's hear yours.
All right. I'm going to go lines. Offensive line, defensive line for UVA are going to be my questions. Defensive line for stuff we talked about earlier, just some replacing some key things. I say offensive line because last year the question was, are they too inexperienced, yada, yada, yada. Now we've got some experienced guys, and if they can start opening up the run game, that'll open up a lot for my boy Matt Johns. And that leads into my player that's going to make the game-changing play, which is going to be Kanan Severin, who's going to score the game-winning touchdown, putting Virginia up 17-14 to win the game.
Bold.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty low scoring just from, I don't know. We'll see. Who knows? What am I talking about?
I like it. That's cool. I guess I'll answer my own questions here. One thing we didn't really jump on, I think that is a big question going in, is replacing the linebackers for the defense. How is, a general picture of how is the UVA defense going to fare against hopefully an advantage in having a true freshman starting, but a talented UCLA team. It's going to be amped. It's their home opener. And this UVA team had a great defense last year, but they're replacing a lot. We already talked about the line, but the linebacking core is also replacing a lot. You're looking at relying on Micah Kaiser. You're looking at relying on freshman and CJ Stalker. So how's the linebacking core going to shut down this fantastic running game that UCLA has and obviously help put pressure on the freshman? In terms of a player that I'm looking to make a game-changing play, I'm going real bold here. I'm not saying Matt Johns. That's too easy. I'm going real bold. I'm going Taquan Mizell.
Nice.
Speaking of recruits
Very good.
That we want to see show us something,
yep.
I know he's shown some flashes of some great play in his first couple of years. I'm not going to say he's been bad or anything like that, but we certainly haven't seen what we've expected from him. And, you know, there's no one ahead of him on the depth chart. I know they've got a lot of running backs there who are going to play with him, but he can really seize the reins as the number one guy with a big play here. He's got that type of home run ability in terms of his speed, his breakaway speed. So let's see it. Let's do it. Let's shock the world. Final score prediction. Am I really gonna go on the internet and say I'm predicting you get it? No, I can't. No, I can't rationalize.
Leave me all alone.
No, I'm sorry. You get to be keyboard cat optimistic. I'm gonna say we show up well though. I think UCLA is gonna score some points in more realistic, normal ways than they did last year. And I'll go 28-17. We'll call it the Hoos will cover for sure, and I think that would be enough to make UVA fans feel optimistic, but certainly starting the road or the season with a loss on the road, but we'll see. It's 3:30. Tune into Fox. You know, we'll all be watching, we'll be chatting on the blog. Unless you guys have anything to add, I'll go ahead and sign off for us and say tune in next week to another edition of Homer and Back. Let me enunciate, and we'll talk the next games, and we'll certainly review what happened down in LA. And until then, I'm Pierce, and for Caroline and Eric, I'll leave you with Go Hoos.
Go Hoos.